You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Wesley Earp, welcome to Hooked on Startups.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Are you sure about that? Because, you know, I would reserve judgment until we get to the end of this before you make such swinging statements as that.
Yes, sir. I'm 1,000% sure. It's a huge honor for me, and I appreciate, you know, the invite.
It's okay, because no one's actually listening, so we can say whatever you like. But so are you looking very smart, actually? I'm feeling slightly sort of, you know, underdressed now. You got a tie and a shirt and... God.
Well, this is a big moment for me. I'm also
at work.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So wearing multiple hats today.
That's right. Well, no, fantastic. Well, I mean, and talk of multiple hats. So you are the founder and CEO of We Invested, which is this sort of conglomerate, you know, comprising books, blogs, podcasts, investing information, social media, and, you know, digital consultancy. I mean, is that a rough estimate of approximation of what you set up?
Yes, sir. That's a great explanation of what I do. And, you know, recently during COVID, I started an ATM business as another branch or arm of We Invested as well. So, yes, sir.
Does that mean you have an ATM in your front room in case people are walking past your house and need cash?
Well, not quite in the front room, but we do place them strategically in certain businesses that could use the cash and that like, you know, being paid in cash.
Because that's actually quite a good business, isn't it? Because this is where you see ATMs in, you know, corner shops and liquor stores and things like that. So,
yes, sir.
The fees are like, you know, is it a good business? Do people use those a lot?
Yes, sir. It's a great business to be in. You know, it's a great cash flowing business, has a great ROI. And
when you say it's cash flowing, does that mean you just go in and empty machines every week? All the cash. You don't get to keep the cash that's in the machines, presumably.
So, yeah. So how it works is you have to initially fund it. So you have to put your starting amount in there. And so how I get paid or how I receive my payment is through the transaction fees. So most ATM transaction fees are around $3. So I may get 250 swipes in a month. And, you know, you multiply that by three. So that's what I get to take home. But the initial cash is like just recycled, like constantly recycled into the machine. But
where does that cash come from? So who actually stuffs the machines with Benjamins in the first place?
Yes, sir. So that would be me.
Oh, wow. In my case, it would be, you know, I'm sorry, this ATM is permanently out of order because unless you want to get more than $10 out.
Yes, sir. So it's something that I do pretty much, you know, weekly or twice a week.
So you actually got to put, so what happens is, so once someone's taken all of your money out, then where do you get the money from to put it back in again? The bank sort of recycle the money and send you a wire or something. And then.
Yes, sir. So every day, you know, each day that I call them swipes or transactions, but I refer to them as swipes. So each day that I get a swipe, the next day, the money is then put back into my business bank account. So it's like immediately replaced. And then I just go to the bank and withdraw the money and do it all over again.
Presumably you have to now a bulletproof armored car instead of your normal station wagon parked outside your house.
Well, I like to try to switch up my schedule and, you know, stay.
I was going to say, we should probably stop talking about this because now, obviously, you're based in Alaska. So for anyone that's listening,
yeah. Reno, Nevada.
Yeah. That's, now, what I mean is I'm trying to sort of throw people off the scent so they don't go.
Oh, okay. Hey. Right. Yes, sir.
Yeah. No, Reno, Nevada in Alaska. Yeah. So,
yes, sir. It's a new neighborhood in Alaska.
Is there like small print on this stuff which says, you know, please follow these instructions. Number one, you have to, you know, sign agreements with store owners to put these ATM machines in, and that's fine, yes, because presumably they get a cut. Or what's in it for them? Do they get a cut of your swipes, or do they just have people that have cash?
Yes, sir. So, you know, there's multiple benefits for people. So they do receive a cut, you know, and I kind of market it as, you know, your business can receive passive income, and it also boosts traffic, and it adds boost foot traffic, and it adds convenience for the customers, so they don't have to try to figure out where the nearest ATM machine is, so they can, you know, get their services.
Presumably, this would be really good for things like marijuana businesses and, you know, typically businesses that paid in cash and can only take cash.
Yes, sir. It would be great for that. And, you know, that's where I'm hoping to expand to. Most, you know, marijuana businesses have preordained partnerships with specific.
I was going to say, they probably already figured that out. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So I have to get a little bit more creative and look for the smaller businesses that may not yet have those partnerships already established.
And I suppose that if there's a way for the business, because if the business is paid in cash as opposed to being paid in credit cards, then they save, what, 3 or 4% on their credit card transaction fees.
Exactly. Yes, sir. So it's a win-win situation for everyone, the business, myself, and as well as the client or the...
Because that adds up, doesn't it? So if you've got like these stores that are doing lots of small transactions where, you know, that 4% makes a big difference. Oh, that's really interesting. But presumably all this small print, so A, you've got to stuff it with your own money. So do you find yourself sort of emptying your sofa to try and get those extra few dollars just to sort of fill it up? And also just the risk of having to go to the bank and pulling out, you know, $500,000 or something every day.
The amounts aren't quite that big yet. You know, I'm hopeful for that to reach that stage one day. But yes, sir. So I've been saving money for a while, you know, and when the pandemic came, I kind of had this nest egg just, you know, waiting to deploy to be invested, you know, to be able to grow my wealth.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's a fascinating thing. And then it's like all these things that you take for granted, like ATM machines, but you have no idea how it actually works, you know, how they are magically filled up. There must be some sort of ATM fairy that flies around at night with a big bag of cash or something. Well, obviously, that's not the case.
Exactly. And it's like, even if I'm standing right next to the ATM machine, people wouldn't suspect me to be the owner of it.
Well, that's right. I mean, do you have like a large fedora hat and a trench coat and dark glasses or something?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and you just sort of, you know, walking undercover or... So that's just one area. So clearly, you know, and when we last spoke, one could see these sort of entrepreneurial cogs spinning. So tell me about We Invested and what you're working on there.
Yes, sir. So We Invested is a financial literacy media group that I started in 2017. So I graduated from college with my undergrad in trust and wealth management in North Carolina, which is where I'm originally from. I received a job offer in Las Vegas. So once I got to Las Vegas, you know, that's when I started seeing real money and real wealth and just kind of that flashy lifestyle.
I just ask you a question? If someone offers you a job in Las Vegas, does it take you A, 1 second to agree, B, half a second to agree, or C, instant agreement?
It took me a few moments because I didn't know how my family would feel and I've never been away from home at that point. You know,
so it's probably 5 seconds then.
Yes, sir. 5 seconds. For sure. So, you know, once I got to Vegas in 2017, I just started reading up. Well, I already went to school, you know, for trust and wealth management. So I had a pretty good base knowledge, but I wanted to learn how to invest and start businesses and grow my own wealth and not just help clients grow their wealth or manage their wealth that they've already grown, amassed. So, you know, I just started reading and searching. And once, you know, the more I read and the more YouTube videos I watched and podcasts I listened to, I realized that, hey, I feel like I can do this too, because this is all information that I've learned and I'm actually seeing it daily. So
I was going to say, but you're in sort of two different worlds, because if you're in an investment advisor or a wealth manager, it's a highly regulated industry. You know, you're having to talk to people in a way, you know, you've got fiduciary responsibilities. You've got to look at them on the basis of, you know, what happens if this all goes wrong? And it's the antithesis almost of an entrepreneurial approach, which is kind of, you know, ready, fire, aim. So what's been most interesting for you having a foot really in two opposing camps?
I think, you know, the We Invested side has more freedom and I can be a little bit more creative. Both sides allow me to be creative and find creative solutions for clients. But on the We Invested side and just kind of talking to people and teaching people and educating people about the basics of finance and how to, you know, take those baby steps to get to where you want to be, which is ultimately financial freedom.
And how uneducated do you think the average person is when it comes to finances?
You know, I think the average person, especially where I'm from, coming from the South, we are not, you know, taught about these subjects, about basic investment accounts and brokerage.
Is anyone there? It's not,
accounts.
I mean, I don't think it's a reasonable thing. I mean, I think it's, do you think that with all the people that you've spoken to, so all of the clients that you have, do you see there is this common thread of lack of information, lack of education, or?
Yes, sir. It's definitely a common thread. And especially with you could have one generation that, you know, were the entrepreneurs, but then the money passes down to their grandchildren and their grandchildren may have no idea about how to manage money or, you know, do a budget or anything, you know, related to finances.
And again, that's, you know, there are various, you see various apps and things like that, you know, how to manage your money, but it all seems very sort of nickel and dime, you know. In other words, if you save an extra 20 cents a day by not buying your Starbucks.
Right, exactly. And me personally, I'm still like old school. I handwrite my budget every time I receive any type of check. I just handwrite it out. And I've been doing that for the last 3 years now. And, you know, it's an awesome thing because I can just kind of flip through the pages to see how I progressed and how, you know, I've just learned since I got started, how much I've learned.
Yeah, I tried that, but I just, you know, the cost of buying red pens was so expensive.
You know, yes, sir. Yes, sir. You
know, where there's no black ink anywhere on this, you know, it's all, you know. But soon, one day, these investments will bear. But no, again, so, but we invested. Is that your foundation or is that, you know, what is the most exciting thing that's happening in that? Or just tell me more about it generally, because there are so many different pieces within it.
Yes, sir. So We Invested originally started out as just a blog. So I was blogging every once a week, not really understanding, you know, the importance of consistency and just being more on top of it. I was just kind of getting my feet wet. So, you know, as I progressed throughout the business, I decided to let me just take it to audio. Let me start podcasting to try to get the same information across, but in a different format, because I feel like, you know, people like to listen more than they like to read. So it grew into a podcast. And then, you know, we started releasing YouTube videos and eBooks. And so how I wrote my first eBook, it was just comprised of all of the or most of the blogs that I did in 2017. So I just put them all together, polished it up. And in 2020, I finally put out an eBook of those blogs to just repurpose that same content that I, you know, were sitting on for 3 years. But if I had to say the most exciting thing to me is just doing these podcasts, you know, interviewing new people, expanding my network and learning about different ways to make money and learning about different ways to successfully run a business and utilize technology. So that's the most exciting thing to me.
The four critical steps there, podcast, sorry, start again, blog, podcast, video, ebook. Now, each of those is a sort of huge step in its own right. And I think really what leaps out of the page here is your ability just to do stuff as opposed to sort of plan stuff. And I, you know, one comes across so many people that say, yeah, I'm going to do a podcast or I'm going to write a book or, you know, I'm going to start this blog stuff. You know, you've done it. What are the big challenges that you must have faced the same as everyone else, but you've overcome those? And let's focus on podcasting, for example, because we're both sort of appear to be on a podcast right now. God, who'd have thought?
Yes, sir. So, you know, some of the biggest challenges are just mental for me. They were all like inner challenges for the most part, you know, just having those initial doubts like, man, will anybody care? Will anybody listen to it? You know, will people gravitate towards it? Will they understand what I'm trying to do? But, you know, what really helped me get over that hump or that, you know, mental block was just that I really enjoy doing this without people knowing. I like doing research and reading finance books, even if I didn't tell anyone I was doing it. So it would be something that I would do, whether people were paying attention, whether I was getting paid for it or not. I was going to always, you know, study and want to know as much as possible about finances. Once I got over that roadblock, it was just like kind of just took off. And I just felt the freedom to be able to be as creative as possible.
Same here. I mean, I feel incredibly free to be creative because I know that no one's listening. So it doesn't matter. But no, I mean, all joking aside, I think we had 3 listeners last week. So we've tripled our listenership. But it is a very important point because if you're doing stuff for an audience, then you've got to try and guess what that audience is. And the problem is you end up being someone that you're not. So there's a lot of people that I speak to talk about this concept of, you know, genuineness and vulnerability and, you know, all this sort of, you know, horrible nastiness. But I think, you know, do you think that that was the key just to say, well, I am who I am. And, you know, if I get feedback, that's great. And does that follow through with some of the other stuff that you're doing?
Yes, sir. Most definitely. That was certainly the case. You know, I would watch YouTube videos and I would hear like, man, I'm from the South. And a lot of people from the, you can get like intimidated about your accent or about the slang that you use. But I just felt like I had to be true to myself and deliver the message in an authentic way, you know, as you just said. So I feel like the people who are meant to hear my content and see my content will gravitate towards it. The right people will find it.
And this links to this sort of concept of fear of failure as well, you know, because that's critical components in building a successful business is knowing that you're probably going to get it horribly wrong at some point. And like what you're doing with the ATMs, I mean, because you could be sitting there on one side saying, God, this is just too risky. There's all of my money out there. I'm not a bank. I've never done this before. But what drives you to say, right, let's just get the shovel dirty. Let's do it. Is that your approach?
Yes, sir. That's definitely my approach. And I guess what drives me is because, you know, one, the freedom of passive income and, you know, knowing what type of life you can live if you just set yourself up early on, you know, and then another thing is just legacy, helping people. So I just wanted to help people any way possible. And I wanted to be remembered as somebody that helped people, you know, really cared about his community, you know, the community that I've built. I just care about people and I want to help them. I didn't want to be the only one that knew about investing. I wanted to share it with all my friends and family.
And that's admirable. But is that all? Because I think from my perspective, for example, what drives me is just creativity. You know, it's just doing stuff and that feeds my soul. Does that play a role in what you're doing, do you think?
Yes, sir. 1,000%. I've always been a creative individual. When I was younger, formed a rock band. I'm a huge Jimi Hendrix fan. And by the age of 15, I got a band together and we had our first performance at my high school talent show. And it's a video on YouTube if anybody wants to check it out. But creativity is something that's always been like inside of me, you know?
And again, I hear what you say about passive income and legacy, but I think those are sort of byproducts of what actually drives us, you know, because I'm always just trying to figure out, you know, what is that thing? Where is the spark? Where does it come from? And I think in my case, it's this desire to sort of build things. And, you know, is that the buzz that you get when you created We Invest? Because, you know, you see it grow from just one thing like the blog to the podcast. And does that feed, do these, each one of those wins, do they help you build onto the next level?
Yes, sir. They definitely motivate me to keep going because it's like, it's something special about seeing something go from zero, you know, start from nothing to, okay, now I have a follow. Now I have loyal listeners that want to tune in every week and they care about what I'm saying. So just seeing the growth is like a different level of pride and accomplishment and, you know, like just satisfaction for me, just seeing things grow from nothing.
And there is, funny enough, a very strange sense of inevitability about certain things that you see or certain people that you meet. And there is that aura about you as well, even though that we are, you know, just conducting this over electronic means. But one gets that sense of inevitability that something really cool is going to happen with this person. So, you know, that's, what are the plans? You know, because I think we're at the beginning of the journey here. So what's the big plan? Because it's fascinating because I know it's going to happen. You can just
tell. Thank you. You know, the plans are to keep expanding and to stay consistent. You know, I have a current podcast right now where I interview business owners and entrepreneurs, but I'm also working on a new podcast just to keep expanding the media conglomerate, as you say, you know, so just to keep creating, you know, in my longer term goals, I want to use all of this experience in this, what I call like a living resume as a means to get started in private equity. That's my real goal. And that's where I feel like the real wealth is in private equity and ownership. So I'm just using this platform to help me elevate to the next level and also build a living resume.
It's interesting because, again, private equity, all of these things, highly regulated. You know, last time we spoke, you were quite excited. We were talking about blockchain and cryptocurrency, which is, again, it's private equity, but obviously not because it's the antithesis of private equity. It's deregulated, it's distributed, it's non-centralized. Is that an area that you're naturally drawn towards, do you think, these new technologies, these emerging markets?
Yes, sir. I love staying ahead of the curve and staying in touch with the latest technology. I just recently purchased a few NFTs, non-fungible tokens, you know, with the hopes of it appreciating and bringing in passive income. So I'm very in tune with, you know, cryptocurrencies, NFTs and, you know, fintech, the entire space where that's headed.
And is there if we draw our Venn diagram of the fact that you've got the schooling in, you know, finance, that you're working within this sort of old-fashioned, dusty, regulated industry, but you're on the inside looking out, so you've got that knowledge. You've got media, and is there a breakout where you think that you can leverage? I think I'm probably asking the same question again, but what's the timing on this, do you think? When's the rocket ship going to be taking off?
Well, you know, I can't give an exact date of the timing. I just, in my mind, understand that you have to put in your 10,000 hours, you know what I'm saying, which pretty much equates to 10 years. So I'm willing and prepared to do this for 10 years or more to get my podcast on a national level, you know, nationally heard, in a position to where then I can branch out and do more deals and get involved in other things, finance related, or maybe get that private equity firm started. So I feel like the podcast and making these connections and building these relationships will help eventually become that rocket ship or that moment, you know, as building blocks to get to that next level.
And you mentioned consistency a few times. I mean, how important? I mean, what does that mean to you and why is it important?
Man, consistency is a moving target for me, you know, because it originally just started out as let me make one post a week. You know, as I continued to do it and got used to it and got comfortable with it, you know, now I try to do 3 posts a day, every day, and a podcast every week. So as I continue to progress and learn more, consistency for me just means doing it daily, putting some sort of energy towards my future goals and plans every day.
But you get a few people that will just do a podcast now and then, and you know, when they feel like it, they'll do a blog post when they feel like it. Why do you think it's important to have this consistency?
It's important to have consistency because when you're, you know, single person operation, speed is very important.
Do you think from just generally from the people, from your listeners, and it's not a trick question. I mean, I think consistency is a critical component because if you set people up, if you start delivering good content, people want more of it. And if it's not there on the Thursday morning when they're kind of looking forward to it, it's a bit like when you're looking for the next episode of Billions and you realize it's going to be on hold for the next 7 months because of COVID. It's like, you know, what am I going to do now? So you're probably getting customer questions all the time saying, when's the next episode?
Yes, sir. And it's a great feeling that people are interested, but consistency is a very important thing. You know, also in building trust with your community and the people around you, it's a great way to build trust pretty much for free. All you have to do is just stay consistent and then they'll know they can count on you to drop, you know, some content that'll expand their mind or help them look at life a little differently.
And the trouble is, though, how do you keep finding new content? This has sort of turned into a bit of a how-to with podcasts, because you can do a podcast where you go through the same process every week. You know, tell us about your background. How did you come up with that idea? You know, to sort of try and find those nuggets, it takes a real, you know, you've got to really sort of get involved with that person. So that's where this whole idea about genuineness and rather than just asking them a series of questions, you know, so is that something that you felt that you find that sort of drives you on as well?
Yes, sir. And it's definitely been times where I felt like I was going through a block and you know, that happens to everybody. But for me personally, to get myself out of that block or out of a slump or whatever it may be, I like to read. I like to watch other podcasters and pull ideas from them. I like to travel and just get inspiration from everything around me. Like I just try to pull from what's around me. And, you know, I feel like that helps me become more creative as well, because, you know, you're just trying to do different things and see what the people gravitate towards the most. I never really put too much emphasis on one certain piece of content or one thing. I just keep doing it, the analytics, and see, okay, well, people like this, so let me try to do a little bit more of that if I can.
Is that, though, the pathway to ruin, do you think? Should you just say, well, you know, forget about the analytics. You know, this guy's interesting. I like this.
That's a great question. And I feel like it could be either way. You know, doing what you like and what you love, I feel like is what will keep you going and keep that longevity. But then at the same time, you know, you have to kind of have that business acumen in there to want to grow it at some point. So it's a mix of both. It's like your favorite artist, like you like their music that's on the album, but then they have to have that one song for the radio. They have that one radio hit. So I just look at it like that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, Jimi Hendrix, for example, it was, you know, complete that out. All of his stuff was just, I think that's probably the greatest example of, you know, someone who just was true to their art. But again, it is fascinating because that fear of, or that need to be accepted on one side, mm-hmm. together with this sort of drive to try and push the envelope, that's that area of discomfort is the place right. where most growth occurs. You can tell I've had far too much coffee today, but you know what I mean?
I love the energy. Yes. I love the energy. It's infectious.
But you know what I mean? It is that feel that anything can happen if you're just willing to dip your toe in that sort of murky pool of nastiness, which is, you know, the discomfort of not knowing exactly what's going to happen next.
Exactly. And it's always like a fear of failure, like you said earlier, like a fear of embarrassment in public. Like, oh, man, I don't want to seem like a failure. And, you know, I feel like at my age, too, I, you know, at some moments I do consider the outside thoughts a little too much, you know, but I just keep going and keep going.
But it's tempting. It's very challenging because it's so tempting to be conform, particularly in the space that you're in, you know, which is a highly regulated industry where you're probably surrounded by people that take a dim view of this entrepreneurial mindset, you know, which is just going to get you into trouble. You know, how do you balance that? That takes a very strong character to be able to have foot in both camps.
Yes, sir. There are definitely a lot of like landmines that I try to avoid, you know, but it's just a matter of educating myself, you know, and being upfront with myself and with the people that I'm working with. And I just let them know, hey, this is the kind of person I am. This is what I'm interested in. I do this, but I also do this as well, you know. So just try not to be one dimensional. It's a thin line to walk, but somebody has to do it.
Where's the break going to happen? So where's the big break? What's going to cause that? What's going to make something happen where suddenly overnight everyone's heard of Wesley?
That's a great question. And I'm not
quite
sure.
I know, they're really good today, aren't they?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I'm not quite sure. Sometimes that's frustrating, not knowing like, man, when is my moment going to come? What's going to be that big moment? And then it's also fun because it's like, well, what's going to be the big moment? And you never know what's really going to pop. You know, my goal is that one of these investments, one of these multiple investments that I have.
Is it the investment that's going to pop, or is it you that's going to not pop literally, obviously, because that would be messy and expensive?
You know, see, how I look at it is, let's say Joe Rogan, for instance, he just recently in the last 2 years, 24 months, signed a deal with Spotify for $100 million for his podcast. So I look at it as, okay, maybe one day somebody will want to sign me for a podcast deal. But if that never comes, if that never happens, I'm prepared to sign myself. I'm prepared to be my own sponsor. So I'm counting on these investments to help me further myself. So I feel like either way, whether somebody comes in and saves me or I have to do it myself, like I'm prepared for either route.
Well, that's a great strategy, you know. And I think from the podcast side, it's interesting because there's so much information out there and it's publicly available, you know, who the guests are and how to contact them. So one approach may be just to follow in the footsteps of these people and interview the people that they interviewed. And because I think it would be quite compelling to be interviewed by someone who's at the beginning of this, again, with that feeling that this person is onto something great. So is that something that you've considered, or is it a stupid idea? Or
no, sir, that's a genius idea. You know, I'm a huge fan of studying the blueprint of those who've gone before me who are successful. So, you know, that's pretty much how I started We Invested, just looking at how and observing how other people did it. And I was like, well, if they can do it, I can do it too. I mean,
that's great, because that's absolutely true. But you can do it better. And once creating stuff, you think, well, actually, a lot of the time you don't invent things. You see things that other people have done and you improve on them. You create a better mousetrap, as it were. So that's a solid approach to take.
Yes, sir, because there's nothing new under the sun. And that's what I talk to people about. Like, I'm not the first person to start a finance podcast, nor will I be the last. But because I'm me, specifically me, you know, we're all individuals. We're all made in how we're made as one person, you know. So somebody may like my voice and gravitate towards it, or somebody may like what I said and how I said it a certain way. So I just, you know, going back to saying, I feel like the right people will gravitate towards it when it's time, you know?
Yes. No, I get that feeling too. As I said in the beginning, when, you know, occasionally one stumbles across things where you get that sort of frisson where you think, well, you know, this, you know, I want to watch this because I think I know how this is going to play out and it's all good. But I think now is a good time to shift gears.
Okay. I like that.
and I'm going to start asking you some of my quick fire questions that I stole from somewhere else. So there you go. You know, all property is theft. So Wesley, my first question in the patent pending Hooked on Startups quick fire round is, what is your favorite word?
Oh, that's a good question. What is my favorite word?
Yeah, it is.
Positivity.
Okay. Question number two. What is your least favorite word?
Can't.
A common theme. Question three. What are you most excited about right now?
The future, like the opportunities. This moment right now, I'm excited about this podcast because this is a new opportunity and you never know where this could lead to in the future.
Fantastic. Number four. What turns you off right now?
I would say, what turns me off right now? That's a good question. There's a lot of things. I'm not to sound negative, but what turns me off right now? I'm not sure right now. What turns me off right now? Time constraints, I guess.
Yeah. Great answer. Number five, what sound or noise do you love?
Another great question. Not to sound like pretentious or anything, but I really like the way money counters sound.
Oh, I know. Of course, because you probably got one of those, haven't you? It's like, you know, you've got your own scene from the movies where it's that sort of...
Yes, sir. I love that sound.
Fantastic. And number six, what sound or noise do you hate?
I'm not sure. I've never thought about that before.
That's quite all right. Probably the sound of the money machine when it goes silent because there's no more money.
Exactly.
Number seven, and you may plead the fifth on this. What is your favorite curse word?
Can I actually say the word on your platform?
Yes. As I said, no one's listening. It's just between you and me.
My favorite cuss word would probably have to be the S word.
That's good. I can then put a child-friendly sort of symbol on my Apple upload now. Question number eight. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Director, like movie director, film production.
Great things to come. Question nine. What profession would you not like to attempt?
It's kind of similar, but I would not like to be an accountant or a CPA.
Do you know, I feel sorry for those guys because everyone has that same answer. Well, most people, you know, so they're just much maligned, you know. So,
yes, sir.
My final question then. Well, almost final, because I've got one more. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Well done, my good and faithful servant.
That's wonderful. Well, And here's the final question. How do people get in touch with you? How do they find out more about you and We Invested? And how do they follow your progress and listen to your podcast?
Yes, sir. So you can find my podcast on all streaming platforms, and it is the We Invested Podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. My website is weinvestedonline.com. You know, we sell merchandise, books, clothes, everything you can think of we have for sale. We're like the Walmart for finance. I mean, on social media, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram is at We Invested.
Fantastic. Wes, it's been such a pleasure. I can't wait to follow your progress and stay in touch. And thank you once again for being a guest on Hooked on Startups.
Thank you so much, man. I had a great time.